start by acknowledging with much gratitude that we are meeting today on the traditional and unceded lands of the Coast Salish people, and in particular, the Qualicum First Nation. So we'll start with adoption of the agenda. Does anybody have any?
That's right.
Oh, you want to move?
I'm ready to move.
Okay. Okay. Well, okay. Could I possibly add to the agenda the item I sent an email about? And that was the, what was it, the Municipal Area Project thing? We're going to talk about that with the MABR, but I'm not sure who they are. Municipal something?
Oh, the Mount Arrowsmith Biomodular Region.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it possible to get an update on that?
I don't know if I have any specifics for you
at this point, but... We'll add it to the agenda then.
Is that the other effective...
The aims to advance Canada's commitment under the UN Convention of Biological Diversity to protect at least 30% of lands and water by 2030.
Okay, well, I can talk a little bit about that, okay. So maybe we'll put that underneath there.
Great. We could create a round table, is that correct?
Sure. We're near the end?
Yeah.
Under new business, round table?
Yeah.
Okay, so then, Doug, are you happy to...
I will be adopt the...
Okay.
The agenda.
As amended, and do we have a seconder? Okay. Good, thank you. All those in favor? Great. Perry's approval of the minutes. Does anybody have any?
I have another little issue.
Okay.
I do have a problem with the recommendation from Council 4, item 4, on the minutes, from the regular Council meeting in May 3rd. I noted several months ago that this third bullet, growing processing eating food, is the largest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions of any human activity. And it's not. It's like 30%. And I think that's kind of misleading. It keeps showing up in the agendas and minutes. So I would like a note added that, in fact, most reliable sources agree that, in fact, global food production accounts for about 30% of greenhouse gas emissions. And the big one is fossil fuels, so that's not to confuse people.
Okay. Just as far as the process goes, this is the recommendation that council, so we can't really go back and amend council's recommendation. But I think when we come to have this conversation, that's when we will point that out, if that's okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. I just have one question, and that was on page 3. Under new business, it said that the committee had worked through the document created from the workshop to identify our priorities in each subsection, and then we would determine the priority areas of focus and then have Shindini refine the priorities to ensure that they meet the Town of Qualicum Beach's policies. So my understanding around that was that we were going to have staff help us with the timelines and the costing and whatnot. And I just was looking, I guess, for some clarification that if this happens, that it would come back to the committee prior to going to council. I think, unless the committee feels comfortable or you have a preference with that.
I mean, totally question you need to, you know, do that, but I think it wouldn't hurt for us to just review it.
We could fill in the gaps and then go straight to council, or if it is the committee's preference to bring it back again, that's all we have to do.
Back to you.
Well, I think we can have, like, we've already started some work on, you know, some of these recommendations compared to yours and such. So it's a work in progress. So if you'd like, maybe in the next meeting we can fill in that table.
Sure.
Discuss it before we work. I think that's, that's great. Have you done?
Well, my understanding of the process was that ultimately the goal is for the recommendations from the committee to council.
Mm-hmm.
And this list, well, this under four here was kind of our first that.
Right.
But it's not a finished product.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So we're going to come back to that with extra work that staff has done for us in the past.
Well, I do think if the committee can look at, you know, we did our best to capture all the discussion at the last meeting. But I think if the priorities or if the actions are out of order, like if these are not your priorities, it would be great to reorder them, you know, to know that earlier so that next time when it comes back, we're really just focusing on timelines and costs. You know what I mean? So we're making forward progress on this.
So you're referring to the appendix?
Yeah, right.
So I thought we would be going through that later in the meeting.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page about, you know, that you depth and how this was going to look.
You know, it might help for the purpose of the minutes in case somebody else reading this is not familiar with what was just said. If we said the following were considered the preliminary top priorities for further consideration or something like that. Does that help? I mean, it doesn't make any difference to us because we know what we're doing. But
yeah. Well, I just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page, I guess, as far as what happens next and what our expectations are of that. So, okay, good. And then there was one other thing. Under the number 8, we have identified some things that future agenda items and discussions. And there were a couple of things that, like one in the minutes there was one, a copy of the town-owned building utility metrics report. I just wondered if that could be added so that it doesn't get lost, if that's okay. And then there was also the RDN emissions report that we were waiting on or hoping to see at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can I give a brief update on that?
Sure.
Yeah, so we've had a lot of discussions with the RDN staff. There's some, they're playing a bit of a dance on their end to time the report, specifically at the point where they also have some recommendations to bring forward because they're expecting a big pushback from the natural gas industry when they bring this forward, so that they're strategically holding it back until they're ready to roll it all out, and they've asked that we not bring it forward until they bring it forward, so it's all timed in sequence. So this is, I think, mid-February is when they're planning to roll it out to their board, and then we're planning to take it in the second meeting in February.
So in that sentence, what is the is that?
No, I'm not there either.
Or is that something different?
So that's the options for the set code and the low zero carbon set code and all the emissions inventory and all.
They're all rolled together.
All packaged.
So it's both the inventory and the recommendations for.
Yeah, and I apologize. I did think that we would have this 3 months ago because that's when the work was actually complete. But yeah. It's just, you know, there's just been a strategic discussions at the RDI.
Kind of interesting that Coloma has just denied Fortis an application to expand the network in their area for all new builds.
Mm-hmm.
So because they say they look at the demand for fossil fuels and natural gas is actually going to go down. It's stabilize and go down.
Wow.
Yeah, so, that was not the town of Kelowna that denied that. That was the BC Utilities Commission.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's right.
For the gas pipeline from, I think, from Narragansett Lake. And
right.
The Utility Commission said there's not going to be the demand for this because right. the trend is to shift away from gas to the home heating fuel source. And now you don't need to go there.
I hadn't heard about that. So we will keep you posted.
Okay.
As soon as it's available.
Yeah, if we could keep maybe those two things listed under number 8, then we won't lose sight of it. That would be okay. Okay, great. So approval of the minutes, then do I have a David? Greg? Thank you. All those in favor? Yeah. Great. Carries. Business arising from the minutes. I guess some of those things were kind of part of that, but does anybody have anything else? Nope. Okay, we'll move on. The recommendations from council, our intention was sort of that we would finish the emissions things and then get to this. So is everybody still okay with that, or somebody else.
I don't know what you mean by finish the initiative.
Well, the our appendix A goes through that and whatnot, get that done, and then we move on to the next topic, which is the food security and and the plant-based treaty.
Okay.
Okay, so everybody's in agreement with that. Generally, okay, general agreement is good. I see a lot of head nodding. The status of the recommendations to council. So there's nothing under that. And then our ongoing business, which is Appendix A, basically. So has everybody had a chance to go through that? And I don't know if staff wants to introduce this at all, or?
Yeah, sure. Happy to.
Okay,
so,
great.
I think the committee will be aware, last meeting, we took all the actions that came out of that one-day climate workshop, and we discussed which of those actions should be considered priorities in the various categories. So between that meeting and this one, we just assembled that, kind of translated to the best of our ability, but what you had said in that meeting into this table. The format is basically what our facilitator, Graham Tchaikovsky, had proposed, and we've left timeline and cost blank just because that wasn't the discussion point at the committee, and staff was going to fill that in. So that's what we're looking at, and I mentioned this briefly earlier, but if we could just make sure that the priorities kind of reflect the committee's discussion. And then that next meeting, we'd be happy to bring it back with timeline and cost filled in.
Okay. Good. Okay, so do we want to start at the top and work our way through? That's a good... you want there at the bottom?
Sorry, I should just big mouth. But I have a problem with the cost column, and... it should be surely the cost benefit. Like, the benefit is that future generations will have a habitable planet. So if we're saying, oh, there's a cost to this, we should also talk about the benefit, which is that we're actually not destroying our grandchildren's future. So that's an important point to me. And secondarily, I don't agree with these three categories of 0 to 5,000, 5 to 20, and above 20. I mean, if we had 0 to a million to 10 million and above 10 million, that would be more appropriate. Like, that's how much I'm willing to spend on projects that are related to whether or not my grandchildren have a habitable planet. So I'm worried the council will look at, oh, this one's at $3, but that's costly. It's only above $20,000. Council routinely spends millions of dollars on other projects.
$5,000 pocket change, really.
Yeah, so I'm really offended, actually, by those categories of what the bunch of is $1 bill, $2 bills, and $3 bills. And that's not in an angry way, but it just seems to be totally incongruous to what we're talking about.
So if I could just comment on those two things. I think on the second one first, those cost categories are, we haven't looked at the cost yet. We haven't really looked at the categories. That's just what Graham had put in. And so Kate, who facilitated last time, just translated those over. I think we need to add a zero, or multiple zeros, to really be accurate in terms of, because almost every one of these would have $3 signs on it, so it's not really informative. But I do have a question, and I think your comment is a good one in terms of including both cost and benefit. So are you suggesting that there would be another column potentially here that you may try to capture? So in other words, we have timeline, we have cost. Would you suggest adding a benefit, or how are you proposing to capture that?
Yeah, good question. I mean, we could approximate the benefit in terms of greenhouse gas reduction.
Oh, it would be really hard to. That would be very difficult.
I know.
That's to start trying to do the actual.
I mean, I could have a crack at some of them.
Anecdotal thing that, this would help get people out of their cars, or this would help to make it easier to ride your bike, or this, whatever. Just,
maybe we just need to have a preface to all of this, saying even though costs are associated, it's important to keep in mind.
Yeah, we need to recognize that at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of kind of wondering if we might be better off, like, certainly adding another column for benefit, and then just getting rid of the dollar numbers there and just having both columns being sort of high, medium, low in terms of cost and benefit, because I'm kind of thinking, depending on, you know, which one you're in and how you approach it, I think the absolute dollar figures are going to be kind of arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it might be better off just sticking with cheap, medium, and expensive, and medium, low in terms of benefit.
Well, it's not that's going to do it, so whatever you think, I guess, is going to be meaningful and instead.
Well, maybe when we fill it in, we can try adding a column for benefit, and if you look at it, and if it doesn't read well, or it doesn't add to the sheet, then we can pull it back off again.
I didn't mean to derail. That's all I
know. No, this is good. This is important. I also wonder, too, about life cycle costing, right? Because if you're looking at the cost over the whole lifespan of something, it's a different window than just the upfront cost of something, right? So I don't know if that's something that should be considered or an approach.
Well, something like that could potentially be added in the comments, right? So if it seems like there might be a good cost-benefit analysis over a longer period of time, there could be a comment about that.
I think one way to do it would be, you know, for example, the fleet. You can say, while the upfront cost is higher, that we save annually this much dollar on maintenance or whatever. And we don't have to quantify too much, but if we can give a four unit estimate. For some of you, say it's easy to do.
Okay.
Can Greg hear us?
Yep. So did you hear that, Greg? Did you hear that?
I caught most of it, yeah.
Okay.
Just a word here in the nervous zone. Okay.
Yeah. So track some of the savings.
Yeah. For unit savings, even if it's not super accurate, it's just ballpark. It gives some idea. Because a lot of the more like concrete numbers will come when you start hiring the consultants and actually do the studies. And you know, so the numbers will just develop as you get for them for the process.
What consultants are you trying to hire for? Specific areas.
So we're planning to hire one for the fleet electrification study. So we've got a COR ready. I've kind of been reaching out to RGs and my contacts to see if there is someone we can hire. And so the idea is to come up with
the microphone pickup or whatever.
I just couldn't hear me.
Okay, so the fleet consultant will help us look at our current fleet, and a lot of it is almost at like retirement time to kind of replace. So we're going to come up with a phase-in strategy for electrification, and also looking at the life cycle costs, and maybe even like it's mostly light duty, not heavy duty at this stage. So that's one thing we're doing.
Are ground maintenance going to be included in that?
That's not currently included in the CR, but this is different specialization in terms of I talk about equipment, right? Yeah, that might
later.
A little later, maybe. And then the other one is we are going to hire a consultant to help us. So we're going to put together a grant application for a feasibility study, which is kind of like almost a detailed design study for our buildings, like how to reduce emissions. So there's three buildings we'll include in this package. This one, the community hall, and civic center. So we get about, I don't remember if it's $150,000 or something like that. But it's a fair bit of money to do a very detailed study. But to get this application,
what we've decided to do is hire a consultant who actually worked before on looking at some of the mechanization processes. And so he's done a lot of work with us like several years ago. So he knows our facilities really well. And we will come up with the current situation, like a baseline assessment, and a target for reductions, and develop a COR and then apply for this grant. So we have a higher chance of getting this. It's a longer process. It takes about 6 months to actually see any money, but at least we can start all the groundwork now.
A federal or a provincial?
It's a CS, federal. Okay. But these are the two big things that we're working on.
Okay. Well, the other thing we talked about when we were talking about fleet and equipment was also sort of right-sizing things, right? And is that going to be part of the process as well, to be looking at whether a full-size pickup truck is really necessary for this job? Or
It's a fleet optimization plus breeding consultant, so we're also actually looking at the optimization of, like, do we need have 50, I don't know how many we have, but yeah, we need 50 trucks. So that is, so traditionally this used to be just an optimization consultant, and now just added in the, now with EV movement, this has become a bit more.
So will that consultant's mandate include a target for net zero as part of the?
Yes, I mean, we haven't written it down in the COR, but the goal is to actually completely get to net zero, but in a phased manner. Hopefully in line with the province's emissions reduction target, but if possible, even sooner. That's thinking behind it.
Okay. So, I don't remember what theirs is, the target by like 2035 or something, or will there be targets, I guess, is one of my questions, because somewhere in here we talk about the targets, but then have we actually identified any targets in all of this?
Well, that's what I was wondering. If the consultant is told to do a fleet optimization greening, what is meant by greening is really the question, and what is the timeline for achieving that? Because as you said, the province has said there won't be any sales of new internal combustion engine vehicles after, is it 2030?
2040.
2040?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Oh, no, it's interesting.
Than that.
Yeah.
No, it's 2040 that
makes no sense. I think the province moved it up.
Oh.
I thought it was 2035.
That's what I thought.
So if the only thing we'll be told is don't buy any internal combustion engine vehicles after 2035, we could save our money because you won't be able to anyway. So ideally, the consultant would be given some kind of terms of reference to do something more ambitious. That's my point. In an earlier meeting, I proposed a timeline. I can't remember what it was. Yeah, which was don't buy any new internal combustion engine vehicles starting now unless you can show that there is no alternative and it's a needed vehicle. And to try to be a totally zero emission fleet by 2038, so that's 15 years from now. So vehicles that are new now would be 15 years old at that point. It could be phased out of service. So that's a more ambitious timetable than would arise simply from waiting for the provincial regulations to force.
It is 2035, and apparently, yeah, BC did change it to 2035, and Canada also has 2030.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
But it's certainly the intent, but I think it's a good idea to write it down in the CORs. Those are our targets.
Okay. I think having targets are important, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to measure our progress.
Well, and we as a committee are making recommendations. The council doesn't have to take it. But, if we say, here's a high bar we think you should aim for, then we've done our job as the Environment Sustainability Committee. I would like this 1.1, fleet and equipment transition, select vehicles and equipment, to include a target and timeline such as the one I just spoke out.
So we can add that to the notes if that's what the committee wants to see is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Transition to electric vehicles and equipment, and target zero emissions by.
I suggest 2038. I mean, I guess it would be 2039 now because we're in 2024, and I was just thinking 15 years is probably an average life of a vehicle in the fleet. I don't know, but something like that. Yeah.
But if you want to make it stronger, we could probably get our support.
I don't think that. And that was just my suggestion.
I don't think we have 15 years. I think we have, we've got to push a little harder. I think even if from this committee, the recommendations are fairly rigorous. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't hurt, and council can always rule or whatever. But you know, 15 years. Things are changing so fast and so badly that 15 years is a long time.
I completely agree with you. So you think it's tomorrow, and I wouldn't.
Okay, well, we'll see what you come up with.
but just on a good note is that we will hopefully be procuring at least one EV this year. That's for sure, I think.
Which, sorry?
One electric vehicle this year for the fleet. So yeah. That's, I think that's...
Hoping to. It depends. The budget is still in...
Yeah, it's not...
How many purchases are lined up for this year?
Well, if there's any... Then
there will be.
I think there was a discussion at our last budget meeting to push off all vehicle purchases until we've done this groundwork.
That makes a lot of sense because if you buy a new internal combustion engine vehicle this year, you're not going to want to get rid of it 5 years from now.
No.
So better off just to keep
saving
the existing ones and keep repairing until there's a clear path to.
Is there any advantage if you have a vehicle which for one reason or other has sort of reached the end of its life, but you don't have in the plan to purchase an electric vehicle, just to lease for the interim? In other words, if the budget certainly won't allow purchase of another vehicle because you didn't expect this one to go belly up as a person.
That's definitely something to look at in the strategy.
That would give a little more leeway, a little more room to
maneuver. And someone might recommend something like that, but you know that's really their specialty.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that every vehicle would be replaced once it no longer works, right? Because people are saying that in fact the most sustainable vehicle is an existing vehicle, even replacing an existing gas powered vehicle. With a new electric vehicle has so many embodied emissions that you might cancel out benefits. So run them all into the ground and then...
Well, that was my point about 2038.
Yes.
Right. So if you have an existing vehicle, don't send it to the scrapyard before its life is up. But use it up.
Right.
But don't buy any new ones, so just replace
it. Right.
Over time.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, I think we had a good... discussion on that one. We're going to have to keep moving if we're going to get through that. The town facilities. So you had mentioned that there was going to be a consultant look at town hall, civic center, and the community hall. Does anybody have any, maybe that could be part of the notes or something that reflected in the notes for that? In fleet and equipment, in fleet and equipment, in Appendix A, it mentions rewilding green spaces as part of the TQB operation.
We haven't got there yet.
It's part of the...
It's 1.5 and we're on 1.2.
TQB operation.
That's right.
Go down through the 1.2.
Oh,
you want to go through
them
each one. Okay.
Yeah. Did we want to ask the consultant or the town to consider not only the fleet of vehicles, but of handheld equipment? Sort of the two-stroke engines?
Yeah, the equipment is definitely part of that. I just, I think my recollection from council budget talks is that the fleet is going to be our first priority and then the maintenance equipment and whatnot.
Yeah, they're already starting to use some electric stuff, and so they're buying that whenever possible.
Yeah. But definitely. I think that's one of those areas where it would be great to show the leadership, and so our residents can see that we're making that transition.
Visible.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So even if it was announced that the town will not have any two-stroke engine powered handheld equipment or any equipment with two-stroke engines as of 2026 or something, I don't know what the year is going to be, but sometime soon would be good.
Yeah. Although I do know we bought some.
No.
Not that
fancy.
Riding mowers.
Well, the riding mowers, we have a four-stroke engine.
Right.
It's a handheld equipment with the two strokes that are.
Yeah. And they're noisy. The noise pollution as well. Okay. So the town facilities, we were going to move on to that one, right? And then reflect that there is going to be
a consultant. And then an application for an FCM grant as well this year.
Okay. Well, that would be great if we could include that in the notes, right?
Okay. Sorry. Application for FCM grant.
To do some of the...
Do the feasibility study, but it's actually, like, they call it feasibility study, but we'll actually get up to a full degree where we can contract out the works. Provide the PR, because they don't really... There's not that much, like, really done in that.
I'm saying it's going to be feasibility and preliminary design. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because there's no point just spending $150,000 on a feasibility study. It's not probably get as much from me.
Then we have to come up with the money to do it. But there may be grants.
Yeah, the grant. Right. So the thing is the grant, so we're using our funding to get the consultants on board to help us with the baseline assessment and the grant application. So it requires a lot of technical assessment and benefit calculation, and then from there we submit this grant. The whole process takes about 6 months, like, from what I understand, and then we have the money for the grant. But we have a good chance of getting this money because we've included our public facilities in it. So
that's good. Does anybody have any other comments or questions on that one, the town facilities?
Well, it would be nice to have an ambitious timeline.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Target.
I don't know what it should be, but like Mary said, it's going to be better.
Yeah. Just put ASAP in.
I mean, just getting the money, like, process of, like, the grant from start to finish it's not an easy process. So
we could be looking at things like solar or other.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's exciting. I think it's exciting. Okay. So we move on to the next one for the airport operations. I think it would be nice to have something in the notes here because we did have quite a discussion on this. And then I don't know if anybody watched the last council meeting. If people spend their time doing that or not, but we had a delegation about electric aircraft and a request to put in electric charging station for aircraft. So I think it did get quite a bit of interest in the attention of council. So I don't know if we should be putting something in about, you know,
well, at the volunteers dinner, we had a very interesting discussion with a member, the chair of the airport committee, who's a pilot and a flight engineer. And his point of view was that there is no way that in the foreseeable near future there can be electric aircraft. He says the batteries are too heavy. And that's the major drawback to electric air transportation. His other point of view, which, again, as I say, I would need the stats on this. His argument was that for 250 cars to drive to Departure Bay, idle, get on the ferry, sit there, go across, idle, get off, and so on, there will be far fewer greenhouse gas emissions from people simply flying across to YVR in 15 minutes. And, I mean, it's quite possible, you know, that if you did the number crunching, anyway, he shook my faith in the idea that flying is bad, ferries are good. Just thought I would throw that out there.
That's, well, one of the things that depends if you're driving an electric car versus a regular car.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the presentation that we received, there is a company that has ordered a plane from Europe, and it's going to be located in Campbell River.
Our flight school.
Yeah. The flight school.
Yeah, they already ordered one, so it's on its way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's kind of...
Sure. I guess, I think we really need to have something in the notes for every one of these categories. Otherwise, I mean, it's just going to council and they don't really have any idea at all for what we were thinking of. Some of them I think can be much more specific than others with, you know, targets and all that kind of thing. Some of them are going to have to be a little vague. This one is probably one that's going to have to be a little bit on the wishy-washy side here, and maybe it's just something like investigate all possibilities to make the airport operations as greenhouse gas efficient as possible, and or you know something like that. Because at this stage, there seems to be a lot of variables around this one and unknowns.
I think what we had in our notes was something about carbon neutral or something, to that we could be a model for a clean, a local clean airport.
Yeah, that probably makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, the point that gentleman was taking to Marion about aircraft and batteries, there are short-haul electric aircrafts commercially available now.
Yeah.
Often used to YVRs well within the range of those aircraft. I mean, you're never in the foreseeable future going to fly from, you know, Vancouver to New York, let alone Paris, because the batteries are heavier than but for short-haul, it is feasible already.
I mean, I think they are testing them from, like, with the seaplanes from Victoria to YVR. From my understanding, the only limitation is, of course, along the lines of what was mentioned there, and that, you know, the batteries are much heavier than the fuel, so the number of passengers you can take goes down, and therefore the cost goes up.
I think it's gone down for about 6 passengers for about 2 with the electric plane.
So like the training where you would have a pilot and a student, whereas for actual commercial shuttling commuters or anything, you would have so few people. Anyway, like we're saying, there's just too many questions and we know so little about it.
Right. Okay, so we're not going to resolve that here. We don't have technical expertise. So let's just say, like Greg said, something about
greenest airport possible.
Yeah, and
a model of local airport.
Investigate all options towards having net zero emissions from the airport in the future, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I just have to say though, that was an unfair comparison between flying from Qualcomm Beach to Vancouver and driving your car on the ferry, because with driving your car, you get to take a car full of people. Like, it's comparing apples and oranges.
Yeah, I know. It's 250 times.
Yeah.
2.2 people or something.
Yeah. Anyway, that's
I know. Like I say, a number, you have to use not a number question.
Active transportation. We had a lot of discussion about active transportation. I think it does appear down below the number of different areas, but under direct influence, under education and awareness, under direct influence,
incentives as well.
Incentives, yeah.
And advocacy.
Yeah.
We came up with some specific points about, you know, as Luke said, we have what's called the age-friendly transportation plan, but it really is an active transportation plan in a lot of ways. We don't have to stick with that name. It could be rebranded as an active transportation plan, and that would be good. This town is really well-suited in a lot of ways to be a leader in promoting active transportation within the town limits for a lot of sort of physical reasons in terms of our layout, our geography, and all those things. So, but we're not going to settle that all here in 5 minutes. That's a detailed plan to be
very exactly.
We did identify a couple of specific points that there's, you know, these pinch points where we have that nice trail along our lake and then the Dolly Mount, but there's a horrible gap from the fire hall to behind Naked Naturals. It's not pedestrian or bike friendly, so dealing with those kind of things and looking at separation of bikes and pedestrians in any future development, because the development of e-bikes has meant that they're not as compatible as what it used to be. And it was one other point that was very specific we came up with.
Pedestrian path, crosswalks.
Yeah. I guess that was the other one we did.
The other part, point, I think, part, maybe it's my step in here, but is to look, you know, work with the RDAM and Parksville and all that, and look beyond the village boundaries. I just personally participate in some recreation activities in town, and in doing that, I've noticed that the majority of the participants there do not, in fact, live in Qualicum Beach. They live in French Creek or Dashwood or Meadowood or Hilliers or wherever. And as e-bikes become, you know, more and more mainstream, there's certainly a potential for all those car trips in to go swimming or play pickleball or go curling or whatever they're doing to, you know, to be done on bikes or e-bikes and stuff. And so I think it's important to look a little bit beyond the town boundaries and make sure it's all connected.
So maybe that would come under advocacy, not only advocate for intra-transport by bus, but also intra-town connectivity for bikes. Lobby the RDN.
There was something in here about connectivity.
To improve active transportation. Yeah, there's already that.
There's something in there, but...
To improve active transportation. Now,
I guess this one relates to the town of Qualicum Beach operational, right? We're looking at operations. There's something operationally that we want to identify for active transportation.
One thing that we sent to council, and you didn't hear this, is I think the team, they're planning to do like these dividers on the fog lines to have more safety for cyclists, so that, you know, the next council meeting, depending on what council approves. So there's a couple of options there.
Okay.
So that's, because I think the safety aspect is, that's what the operational team is working on, and planning is working more on the roofs and the planning. And when we get to the bus, I can give you a bit of update from RDM.
Okay.
Good.
Well, if anybody has anything, if you think of something later or you want to, then we could maybe send those into staff or circulate it, okay, amongst ourselves. 1.5, rewilding landscapes, and that's been a big push on pollinator pathways, I think, partly, mostly, and also... reducing the amount of watering and the type of plantings and all of that kind of thing.
So it's not only planting new plants, but just not mowing down the natural plants that come up on their own, grass and flower, so on. So, interesting to do a cost-benefit analysis, not mowing, the money you save.
Yeah, that was my pitch to council. but they still attached a dollar figure to it. So
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where that's going. And I don't know, we haven't really talked about this, but I'm sure everyone, well, maybe I'm not, is aware of all the new provincial legislation, right, that has impacted the town. So a lot of the things that we had hoped and dreamed to do in this term, some things have been pushed off to the end of the term or into the next term, because our new priority is meeting the mandated legislative requirements by June 30th, having a lot of changes, right?
Right, Luke?
Yeah.
So this is one of the ones that I've been pushing for, but I know that there's been some pushback because staff is, maxed out right now. So we've kind of agreed that we would not try to push these things at least for the next 6 months and see where we go after that.
I wouldn't think it's a big ticket item in terms of Hunter's CO2 one way or the other.
It's not really a CO2 issue or a greenhouse gas issue. I think it's more like a general environmental issue.
Right.
More pollinators and biodiversity. That otherwise would live in green spaces that are mowed down to be dead space.
Yeah.
Really part of our mandate. Well, I think biodiversity is, though. Like, I think as you pointed out, you know, when you look at the mitigation, it is part of mitigation, right? It's about emissions, but it's also about keeping the biodiversity or enhancing it.
I don't know. We haven't really clarified that. I mean, we've been focusing on reducing GHG emissions and not, you know, mass species extinction or any of those other things.
But my understanding is we're going to be later on taking another closer look at the Urban Forest Master Plan and its implementation. And that would fit within that framework. I mean, not to ignore it here, but it certainly is an integral part of the Urban Forest Master Plan.
And also our food security piece that we're going to get to at some point, right? The next couple of months. So
I think this made a good point. If we roll it in with that and it's not off the table, it's just a little further over on the table so that we don't overload staff and council with too many things here.
Yeah.
There's also the education and awareness point. I don't want to jump ahead, but that includes updating the OCP and the Sustainability Action Plan, both of which would be good homes for general ecological sustainability as opposed to just climate change part of it.
Okay. 1.6 is build e-bike and bike storage. So this is part of the conversation we had, I think, under active transportation. It kind of fell under that. So this is a specific operational item, right?
Did we need storage or just rack
storage? Because with e-bikes, they're very expensive.
Oh, right.
Greg,
you may also want to, just in the notes, put, downtown and near recreational facilities, or just some idea of where we were thinking of, the
strategic locations.
Yeah, strategic locations, sure.
And one thing that would be great would be just factor planning for bikes and pedestrians, especially bikes. Like, we typically have the public space around developments is sort of planned for cars and pedestrians, and bikes are not. There's not like the bike park in front of QF, which is totally inadequate. You still see 25 bikes lined up to park in the garden. And it's not exactly clear where you're supposed to ride your bike and where you're supposed to get off. There is no bike lane along firm there. And, so it's not really factored into the planning of the space at the time of if the infrastructure is developed. It would be great if, when the Buckra site is developed, for example, that was factored in right from the start. I don't know exactly what the best practices are around doing that, but there must be some, I would think.
Yeah, I have some resources I share with you.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Next is life cycle costing. And it says water usage. I don't know if it was specifically just water usage. Does anybody have the recollection of, around that?
I think, was this to do with the RDN? What airport? No, this before. Before that.
I don't think it was RDN specific. I'm scratching my brain just trying to remember the context as well.
I think we talked a lot about people not watering their lawns.
Yes.
And then not mowing, and then all the greenhouse gases that would be saved if people weren't out with their gas-powered lawnmowers and so on. And then it has the life cycle cost. I don't know what like that means, but has there been any thought from council about the idea of really increasing the cost of water? Because it's so cheap here, it's cheaper than anywhere. And in fact, I've even heard someone from the town suggesting that it's good if everybody uses lots of water because then it helps to finance the thing. Is there any appetite for increasing the water rates at Qualicum Beach to reduce the wastage?
We do have a water rate bylaw that will be coming to council at some point. I don't know what the timing is, but it's due for renewal. And one of the options is to introduce a higher tier for higher consumption users. Because it is true, like pricing is a very effective mechanism for increasing consumption.
It's kind of interesting because I had a conversation with one of my neighbors. He had a conversation with another neighbor up the way, and they were really surprised at their water bill this year because, of course, the drought, and they all had green lawns. And, you know, basically, and they water at night, but not necessarily terribly efficiently. So that sort of is factoring in as well, and that may change people's habits to a degree as well as whatever other measures is carried out in a bylaw.
I mean, just because it's going to get drier, people have to...
Well, yeah, it is drier. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, considerably drier.
I had that conversation as well with actually a friend, and, you know, basically now to have a green lawn is a luxury.
Yeah.
You know, and if that's something that you value, then you can pay for it, but it is a luxury.
Depends your line of credit.
Now, we did have a presentation from Bob Weir, the director of operations, and he made a case that the system as it is working well, that Qualicum Beach has a reliable water supply, unlike some other municipalities, and you need to put a certain amount of water through it. We actually have increased efficiency. We're not increasing our consumption to move to low flush toilets, et cetera. The per household consumption has gone quite a bit down from where it was. And he didn't feel that we had a problem in terms of where we were. We were taking his word for that, of course, but he's the man who runs the system and felt that we were in pretty good position there.
I've heard people say that we have an unlimited water supply. And I have to really question that because aquifers are never unlimited.
No, that's not true.
Either sucking it from somewhere else or, you know, using it up.
But we have an aquifer that is, its recharge capability. We're not drawing it down. It's basically the floodplain of the Little Qualicum River, which is a huge alluvial deposit covering many hectares of land. And it recharges every winter, and so we're not. We take it up and down every season, but it's just a
little bit. What about this winter when it looks like we'll get no snow? What if this winter we get no snow?
It's not
no
snow fountain.
Well, where's the little...
Well, the river is.
The river has got to come
out. No, really. The water comes down the river.
Upper water.
It falls in snow or rain. And
oh.
The seasonal flow of the river is somewhat snow dependent.
Yeah.
But the recharge happens during winter.
Yeah.
And the water comes down the river. Whether it falls with snow or rain. And the flashiness of that river is actually not highly dependent on whether it falls with snow or rain, because when you get snow, then you get rain on snow events, which are even flashier than the snow events. So You can go online and look at the BC hydrographic data for those rivers. And anyway, my point is that is a sustainable aquifer at current levels of use plus fish.
Okay, even so, it would be good if people didn't water their lawns and use gas-powered equipment to maintain them.
In a little sense of that, because we grow food, and we use a lot of water because we grow food, probably we don't use any more water than if we're watering the lawn.
Probably not.
That adds about $300 a year to our annual bill.
Oh, does it?
We're happy to pay that because we grow probably $5,000 worth of food using it, so it's still a good deal, you know. But
okay. Well, life cycle costing, to me, that's one thing. I don't know how it relates to the water usage, but anyways, exactly where we were going with that. And again, the prioritization of capital projects, that was our next thing that we talked about. And I'm not sure whether that was...
If I remember correctly, it was keeping the goal of GHG reductions in mind when we prioritize capital projects.
Right, and that was stated in further up when it to prioritize lowering GHG emissions in capital projects.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. So maybe just a note there that would.
Yeah, let's add a note. Good idea.
Okay, so on to education and awareness.
Could I just ask a quick question?
Sure.
Just before we move away from operational, are these in the right order? I think we've gone through and clarified what the different items mean, but is this the order that you recommend as the priorities?
Oh, these are prioritized. I didn't realize that. Well, I think airport operations could move down to the bottom because we are so unsure about it.
Well, under prioritization of capital projects, explain to me again. I thought what we were talking about there was the idea that if you're spending big money on projects, are they projects that advance our net zero GHG emission target or not? And so we should prioritize. Like, for example, we were just talking about converting the public buildings from gas heating to
electric pumps,
that's a capital project. But we also build capital projects that don't have any greenhouse gas emission benefit at all. So why don't, that was part of the point of prioritizing. Let's make those a priority and make that a sort of a filter by which, or criterion by which potential capital projects are evaluated. Does it forward our climate mitigation targets?
Okay. Bernie, can we make sure that's reported? Just if that was the committee's intent, it's a fine point that we're looking at prioritizing capital projects that reduce GHG emissions.
With regard to the airport operations, it might not seem like a big deal, but I know that's something that council hears a lot about. So I actually am quite comfortable with it being up there because we do have a lot of concern around leaded fuel, noise, which would be alleviated if we do go electric in that. So the more we can move in that direction, I think it's a plus for our residents, all of our residents. So it might
chart well.
Okay. Well, actually, it's called the one that more under the flight path now. So
did the people who gave the presentation, did they suggest that the electric planes would be a lot quieter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Barely.
Because some of the noise comes from the propeller, not from the engine.
Yeah. But they have some good statistics about measurements that was 1,500 feet, and the decibel rating were extremely low.
Oh, that's good.
I was pleasantly surprised to hear that, because I had always had the understanding that the profile was quite significant. But anyway, that's a little bit of a tangent.
Yes.
If I have one suggestion on your operational, I feel like active transportation, potential benefits of shifting to active transportation would put an iron on the list for me.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Is to look at transportation
you know, use of personal cars is the biggest problem.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that is going to alleviate that should be part of the priority.
And it's something, it's a place that Coracon Beach is uniquely in some ways situated to be a leader and an example, kind of, because we already have the compact downtown that many of the towns don't have. Like, it would be harder, say, for Parksville to think of that, or Nanaimo, or places that are strung out as a strip along the highway. So we have kind of a natural advantage to be a leader and act as transportation.
I think certainly in our discussions at the workshop, we focused a lot on active transportation, so it does make sense.
Could we, without
1.1 or 1.1, what do you think?
Could we flip 1.6 and 1.5? In other words, build the e-bike storage and so on, so it fits right underneath active transportation.
Oh, that's cool. Why don't we just roll 1.6 into 1.4, or 1.3, into,
yeah.
Sorry, 1.4,
mm-hmm.
Brings us so small. Because it really is part of the activity.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know,
as you
once you get there, story
and move it up.
And move it up on about there. Can't be happy with that?
Yeah.
That
makes sense.
Good sense. And the prioritization of capital projects, that's not a thing to do. That's a policy to implement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a philosophy, almost a mindset. It could be a policy.
Okay. Gotta keep moving here. We're gonna
use that action.
Oh.
So increase some active transportation to
1.3.
1.3. And then we'll be changing,
we were going to include 1.6 within 1.3.
1.4 is active transportation.
So,
okay,
yeah.
Then 1.3 and, yeah, is active transportation, whatever it's, you know. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so we'll move, okay. You're okay with the order? Everybody's okay? If it's, you have something that you think of later and you want to let us know, that's fine. 2.1, so education and awareness, home energy navigator, heat pumps, home energy efficiency. I think maybe just a note that says that the town has the program and...
We're enrolled in that, so there's no action item needed, right?
I think, you know, if all...
Other than make people work.
Sorry. If we look at all these priorities, it seems to me that we should keep in mind the actual impact, the actual contributors of greenhouse gas emissions, and it's transportation and then buildings. And so everywhere that we can prioritize whatever will get people out of their cars seems to me should be 2.1. So in terms of home energy navigator, because of, you know, buildings, which is about 30% of our
emissions,
then, you know, probably active transportation should go up there. As 2.1,
everyone agreeable with that? Or do you have?
Yes, I am. And I'm also thinking about this heading of category of education and awareness, because we did talk about there's some things that we can't really do much about directly. I mean, people can go out and buy whatever car they want. Town has no legislative authority to do anything about that at all. But it was suggested that the town might have an education and awareness role in terms of what we put out in the web page or in the, you know, the newspaper page that comes out in the PQB News. And
the town tidings.
Town tidings and the various pamphlets that are available, that kind of stuff. I'm just wondering what the sense is that we might want to treading into too sensitive territory. Would the town have a role in trying to make people aware of the fact that that's really our number one source of emissions and that we should really be looking at our personal transportation choices?
On the website.
Or wherever else the town
yeah.
does education and awareness, whatever the venues are.
So we do have budget allocated this year for like specifically for outreach on these type of issues. You know, so we can come up with a couple of key messages or presentations for the public on these issues and, you know, guide them to grants or this is not impossible.
I thought of wondering if there's any way, which isn't cost prohibitive, of the town monitoring or collecting data on the number of electric vehicles currently within the town at a certain date, the number of heating systems which run renewably on heat pumps, for instance, the number of houses which have solar installations and so on, to kind of keep it. You can't be too prescriptive in that because you find yourself with an uprising from certain factions in the community, but it's just a sort of a general indicator and people say, you know, my neighbors are, look at what's happening here. You know, maybe we better go out and get on board. Just a general awareness because I'm always flabbergasted at the lack of awareness of the number of people and certain things, so.
Well, the last, what was it called, quality of life survey was so depressing. I mean, in every case, people's choices were, well, we need more restaurants and more, you know, everything but environmental considerations, which usually ended up the least important. So it does seem as though the town already has some sort of built-in vehicles that could be used for education and awareness. One of them is the OCC update, of course, which, you know, can be something other than simply an opportunity to update the OCC, but could provide the information that here's what's needed and here's where the problems are and some of the stats. The other, the sustainability action plan, of course, is another opportunity. Those are both, I believe, being updated. So that would be another opportunity for getting out in the public and say, okay, we're doing the sustainability action plan. But when it comes to the new quality of life survey, which is, I believe, scheduled for this year or 2024, whether or not it'll get done. Yeah. Well, I think that the town should take advantage of these kinds of vehicles and just gently put the finger on the scales. So instead of saying, you know, which would you rather, to have good parking and good pickleball and so on, how about really weighted questions like, do you foresee, you know, political instability from climate change in your lifetime or in your children's lifetime, you know, sort of weight it to put in place the full horror of the unfolding climate disaster and try to use it as an opportunity to educate people and make them aware of how critical this is and that it's not that important whether or not you can park. It's important whether or not your grandchildren will be fighting wildfires.
I think it's difficult to deal with topics that at the very least are nebulous for a lot of our population. I mean, when you talk about climate change, one of the hardest things is to try and create some sort of sense of how it manifests itself. People don't necessarily connect flooding and drought and so on. Say, oh, well, you know, we've had time. I remember back in 55 when, you know, we had 3 weeks of you know, temperatures over such and such and so on and so forth. So there's lots of ways that they can kind of rationale that into their memory, into their memory bank. So I think we sort of have to be pretty concrete and asking for choices such as that, because I think the farther we get away from how it really affects my quality of life here and now, the harder it is to get the results that you may want, that you may desire. Just kind of my thinking.
Okay. I did put that forward, I think, about the EV, so like they're using the quality of life survey. But I don't know if that information is available through ICBC or somewhere, or like how many people in our community drive the people.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have all that data.
Were they willing to share it?
We have the data for the emissions from ICEs. That's in the emissions report.
It is. It's based on registration location.
Yes.
And so it's not necessarily the number of people that live in the town and have them, because if they registered their vehicle where they bought it in the non mall.
Right.
So there's a number of inaccuracies in the report that you'll immediately pick up on when you read it. You go, this is really interesting, but there's also some things that make your eyebrows go a little bit, and just because of the lack of direct data from ICP.
Yeah.
We have to infer some things.
Yeah.
And the census is also another, like you mentioned, like heating sources for buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So the census, does have that type of information on the building stock and the way that they're heated.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just looking at the time. We're already 10 past four, so we're kind of plugging along here. Number two, education and awareness. So we talked about maybe moving active transportation up higher because of it being number one priority, sort of, I guess, for the greenhouse gas and buildings after that. So that would be the home energy navigator. Does anybody have any comments about any of the notes that maybe are missing or that we need to add? I mean, under town commitments, are we meeting the targets we are setting? I guess, I don't know if we want to go into more detail about that. Marion mentioned the sustainability action plan and an update. Are we planning on updating that?
No, I don't think it's actually in the strategic plan,
though. Oh, I thought it did something online about how it was supposed to be updated 2024 to 2026. In any case, just that whenever that does happen, it would be a useful vehicle. But also, just as the quality of life survey was depressing in terms of environmental awareness and interest, the targets, the sustainability targets, I mean, practically none of them have been achieved. Mm-hmm. So this is another opportunity for communicating to people, here's what we have to do and here's what is happening. And I don't know that the targets are, we have current targets or...
In the sustainability plan.
Yeah. But I mean, a lot has changed in the last 10, 11 years, right? So are they really relevant still, or are they the ones that we should be focusing on?
It's a pretty good plan overall, say, and it's to be updated.
I think there might be some things that are missing from it, and given what's happened over the last decade or so.
Well, it should be updated at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few things, and the targets are not as ambitious. Because this point about are we meeting targets, this was, Tegan brought that up, there's no point in having targets if you don't then
wonder,
are you meeting them?
Yeah.
So that was really the only point there. I don't know if it has to go on your education and awareness. It's really just something for the town to do, to the monitoring.
So should that all be under operational?
I don't know where to take them. I don't totally understand these categories, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it could be there. It's information, so.
Yeah, in terms of education for the, or awareness for the public, information for the public, that's what that kind of thing is for, to try to create some accountability and transparency and so on.
Right.
Okay. So,
think that climate action and sustainability comments create a climate sustainability section on the town's website. Is there anything that's missing from that? What do you think that's?
Well, that was my idea of where education and awareness about things that the town doesn't influence directly, like social choices, motor vehicles. Karen had that email around pointing out that for people who do long-distance air travel, that's sometimes the single biggest ticket item in your annual carbon footprint is if you fly long distance. Many people may not be aware of that, so that's another place that could go. The fact that your diet can have a big influence, your food choices, so all those things might show up on the town website. I don't know. I'm a little bit nervous about the town putting itself in the role of
advocate
for those things. I mean, I think you can give it a background. People can say, I don't need you to tell me this stuff. Go away. But
if it's opinion,
yeah,
or moral judgment, you know, it's really wrong to eat meat and stew your, you know.
Right. It's just factual.
As opposed to a healthy diet includes, you know, less meat and more whole grains, vegetables.
We can put in the links to a carbon cap, personal carbon calculator.
That's what I was just going to say. When we started planning on this, and we looked at the Central Sandwich, I think their climate action plan, and you could go in, and then it just creates awareness about these are the things that are, you know, the biggest impact on your carbon footprint. Right?
Yeah.
So,
good idea, yeah.
Yeah.
They are actually
online. But also maybe some facts to back it up. Okay, here's why.
Yeah.
If you fly 10 times a year, you're... Yeah. Okay. Vegetation, promote gardens, lawn watering education surrounding native plants. Could be part of the town's website. Yeah. Active transportation, we moved that one, public education program on multi-use trail etiquette, better signage on trails, brochures. I think those things are all happening. Yeah. Dietary food, encourage the creation of a policy that would require all town-sanctioned events that include food to be centered around climate-friendly options.
Well, that one could we, it kind of has vegan and et cetera in brackets there. I'm just wondering if we could sort of expand the scope of that a little bit and add something like locally, sustainably produced food or something like that in there too. I think it's a little bit too prescriptive the way it is.
Well, there's a lot of problems with our diet that could be improved. The plant-based treaty referred to a study by Eat Lancet. I don't know what Eat stands for. Eat Lancet, a really in-depth, excellent study, but it showed that it's not only meat, but sugar is also another, overconsumed, and, you know, maybe it's not just vegan, but all kinds of.
Well, I've seen those websites that show kind of a bar chart of the greenhouse gas emissions per calorie or per kilogram of food. Well, beef and lamb are way up here, and pork and chicken and eggs and cheese, and then you get into the beans and peanuts and potatoes. The lentils are like
sticking.
So those are kind of useful. People think, I'm not maybe ready to eat a totally vegan diet, but I could still be doing way better than what I'm doing if I'm eating a quarter pounder every day. You know, so. And there's a tendency to have adopted the term plant-based as opposed to vegan, because vegan has gotten a bit of baggage around it because, you know why. But there's also the issue of food waste. It's not just what foods, but how much it waste out.
Yeah.
So, I was suggesting that the town could have a policy for town events or where the town has events catered or town sanctioned events like the show and shine and those kind of events, that they have a policy that we should have minimize waste Like that whole business of the big garbage can, all the food containers and the unused food and everything just goes in the garbage can. That's horrible. They shouldn't be doing that. Plus that they should offer at least as an option plant-based menu diets options.
I would get caught up in all of the like single-use plastics and the bottled water and all those kinds of things too. I think those are places where we should be and set an example and providing the education.
Absolutely.
The good thing is the province has already said that this has been the single-use plastics for catering. They came last year. So all restaurants like will take out. I think in the next 3 or 4 months, they gave them a bit of a grace period because they must have bought stuff already.
Right.
And then I don't know if it's March or sometime this year they will have.
They have to be compostable containers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not sell
and
it to and cotton.
Yeah, a number of places have actually already started doing that several months ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if we
I guess when you're having an event, though, it's a little different than just
like
out from a restaurant, right? So you can have like lots of plastics and anyway. Or even like family day or beach day. So those kinds of events create garbage.
Just one thing that I would comment after maybe, and I'm not sure that it really pertains to this section, particularly on vegetation and on signage for, or is it for trails and that sort of thing. There are a number of places in town here that are really infested with spurge laurel, Daphne, which is toxic, highly toxic. The sap is toxic.
Really?
The roots are toxic.
Oh, yeah.
The berries are toxic. And unfortunately, the plant at certain times of the year smells really nice, very sweet. And I would hate to see a situation where kids, for instance, were, you know, victims of that, but it probably belongs more in urban forest management. But I think it needs to be top of mind because there are a number of places in the community all around here on trails.
Yeah.
So on the museum trail is a good one, and to a lesser extent probably the Dolly Mount, so on and so forth, that sort of we need to be
all of the invasives, but yeah, that one
yeah.
is becoming more and more.
Yeah. And it's a pretty plant, which is done for all times of the year.
Yeah.
Anyway, my rant is finished.
Well, invasives, especially toxic ones, right?
Yeah.
And then garage conversions. The last one there, education surrounding the positive aspects of converting garages to living spaces. So
and
there was
maybe a how-to.
Well, I think with the heat pumps and some of the other climate action things, they could be how-tos as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
That might be one of the approaches. One of the things that I've heard, you know, around the whole short-term rental piece and month versus monthly rentals and whatnot is that it's actually the BC Tenancy Act that is the problem, so maybe there's a room for some advocacy or something around this as well. That, you know, making it more attractive for people somehow to rent out these spaces because people are doing it because they're afraid of getting bad tenants or whatever, right?
I could jump in. I see that we have 4 or 5 more categories.
And
3 minutes before the end of the meeting. So this might be a good stopping point. So in between now and the next meeting, maybe we could fill in those missing columns, add the column for benefit.
Okay.
And then, you know, clarify some notes and things like that. So, and
then next time. Each of us doing that as
no, no, sorry.
That'll
be our homework.
Perfect.
And then we can pick up here next time.
Would it be possible, getting back to conversion, if we can spend 3 minutes on that, is it possible for a town to do something like is done if you are renting
to somebody and you share a kitchen, you can throw them out the next day if you don't like them. And in order to get over the fear people have of renting and then being stuck with renters because of the draconian, well, I shouldn't say that, the Rentals Act, which is, you know, trying to protect renters, would it be possible to say for a town to put in a provision that if it's, say, in attached to your house, that there could be certain relaxation of the, what is it called, the Landlord Tenant Act?
Residential Tenant Act.
So that if they're, you know, loud partying, dog barking, these kinds of things that people are so afraid of, that it would be easier to end the tenancy?
Well, that's provincial jurisdiction, but I don't think
no.
The town couldn't override.
No, I wish we could. That would be potentially very powerful. Mm-hmm. But that's not within our sphere.
But we can advocate.
Yeah.
For sure, right. For sure. Right. That to it for an attached dwelling, there's been that slight relaxation. Of course, that would be an everydayancy. So it's a wicked problem. Yeah.
Okay. We had talked about adding a round table. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the 30% biodiversity by 2030. So, we have been trying to move the dial a little bit on setting aside some land or having it recognized as other environmental...
Other effective...
OECMs. We've been working with... the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Region, and they have some money and some staff time to help the town do some of that work. But as I said, the priority now is meeting our legislative requirements that have been introduced by the province. So we were looking at perhaps my suggestion was our two well fields and looking at we would have to create a management plan for both of those areas and then apply to have it designated. But as I say, the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere, actually it's the MABRI, the Research Institute, has some funding, has access to some consultants, and would love to work with the town of Colcombe Beach on preserving some of the land to be counted in that 30 by 30 or 25 by 25 provincially and 30 by 30 federally. So we'll see what we can do.
One of the things that we've talked about a few times that hasn't really made it into this framework is the fact that there's a lot of forest land within the town boundaries, mature forests, and some of that is under no particular, other than, I suppose, that the tree cutting bylaw may or may not apply to it, depending on what the zoning and whether it's managed forest land, for example. There's potential for huge greenhouse gas emissions if that forest land is converted to non-forest uses. So it'd be worth looking at whether there's options under the 25 by 25 to 30 by 30 to move some of that land into conservation status, possibly working with the landowners to help them access funding to do that.
Which land are you talking about? I'm not.
Well, if you drive is it Rupert that goes along the north boundary of the town, past Arbutus, all the way around where it turns right and goes down Laburnum till you get to the elementary school, there's about 80 hectares of forest.
Is that not ALR?
No.
So, are you mean before you get to...
All on your right, if you're going west along Rupert and turning,
Yeah.
The west.
And then you're turning north along Laverne, and that's still on the right. That huge area of forestland. Most of it privately owned, but it's mature forest is within the town boundaries. And there may be an idea that in the long term that's going to be part of the residential area of town. But
is that not the green belt?
A lot of it is provincially owned. And then some of it is owned by the, a little bit is owned by the town. There is private land for sure.
Yeah.
Two other private owners.
Yeah, I'd say 50 acres of private land. And
so some provincial, some town.
Quite a bit of provincial.
And anyway, so it would be good for the district. But the provincial is good news because then you can work with the government and say, look, it doesn't make sense. Because the province has the right to sell it off tomorrow if they want to a real estate developer. And that doesn't mean that they will, but it would be good to bring it into some kind of more clearly defined conservation.
Yeah. Well, my understanding is that, you know, part of that is that it's now with this federal, I would say, First Nations land is tied up kind of with that.
Right.
But, and also the town does have a vision for that and a sort of an agreement. I don't know if it's a covenant that's in place or what, but there's a cluster development that's been proposed or approved for that area so that most of it would stay tree, but a certain section of it would be, that was, is where the development could or would happen.
That's in the official community plan. And policy, so it's not, it could change in theory, like by a future council, so it's not as strong as a covenant, but that'll have been planned to sponsor some development.
Right. Well, just as we talked about before, every time you convert forest to non-forest, you have a huge emission of greenhouse gases, so that's something that should be kept in mind. I know that it isn't always easy or possible to avoid that, especially where it's privately owned land and the landowner has an expectation of some development.
Would it be possible to include an overall statement to the effect that when considering applications for development, the potential for greenhouse gas emissions will be weighed in the decision? And so, for instance, placing a cluster development in the middle of the forest, especially with the wildfire issues and the loss of carbon and sequestering is an issue, and that rather than just taking capital projects or prioritizing or approving capital projects based on climate change priorities, to also review all developments in terms of their effect on climate change and wildfires, and not just mitigation but adaptation.
We
should consider that. Okay. Yeah. That's a big discussion, but something that we wouldn't want to see
it fall totally
on. No. Anything? I just have one
sure.
To let you know. So BC Nature reached out to us last year to talk about this study by that. So I'm happy to hear that there's so much support from NADR on this. And we have started working on our community wildlife resilience plan this year, and we'll have the consultants coming over from Vancouver in the second week of February, and they would like to consult with the committee on the plan. So they're here from the 14th to 17th, so any of those days when you're free, we'll send out an email.
Okay,
I hope you're available.
So would they be open to suggestions from us, or they're just going to tell us what they're doing?
This is really the kickoff. So, I mean, they've done a lot of these plans for other communities. So this is like the phase one, where it's not the fuel management and more the strategic vision of which areas and what the solutions could possibly be. So, yeah, they're open here.
Okay, we'll look forward to that. Yeah. Okay, so well, our meetings are normally the first Friday of February or of every month, right? So I don't know if we could
May 3rd would be your next.
But we'll probably need one before that, I think. A month meeting
prior to the next scheduled one, which is May.
Oh, my God, yes.
So, are we doing it in February?
February, yeah. We generally have it the first Friday, so
that
would be February 2nd.
That won't work for me, I know right now.
Okay.
Well,
we can maybe reschedule and then try to coordinate it with the consultants from the wild planning or something.
Great.
So maybe we can try to work on
it. That was the 14th to the 17th?
14th to the 17th. I think there's a council meeting on
February.
In February, I don't know the date.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Well, there's the committee of the whole. On the 14th. There's a committee of the whole, or I don't know if it's a council meeting or a committee of the whole on the 14th, so we'll put up like a booth outside.
Okay.
For outreach.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll do like public engagement at the Civic Center as well. So, sorry, would it be your intention to continue on this appendix or to do this?
Well, we're going to have, I think we're going to have an updated appendix to review that's hopefully almost ready to go to council, kind of.
But we only got halfway through it.
Well.
I think we need to get through the second half.
Yeah.
In terms of the priorities, but
yeah.
Well, staff will spend some time working on it to make it better.
Okay.
By the time you see it. Right. Yeah.
So we'll have an updated version to look at next time and finish going through it.
Okay.
And then,
So perhaps two meetings, perhaps that meeting where you finish the appendix and then the different meeting.
Sure.
You want to make that into a committee meeting, an environment sustainability committee meeting?
That is just, so there's maybe an hour or two consulting with you, with the team that's coming from Vancouver.
So not a committee meeting?
No.
Okay.
I mean, whoever, and it is with the committee, but informal.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the consultation meeting.
So do we have an idea for a date for a committee meeting?
Well, would the 9th work?
I'd have to look at the calendar.
Okay.
And have proposals.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's
perfect.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Thank you, everyone. Sorry.
Thank you.
We have a thank you, Doug. Thank you, Greg, for joining us.
Bye, Greg.
See you around on your bike.
Yeah, for sure.
We are adjourned.
Okay.
Yay.